afternoon, we went to the the Seco School. Yeah, for and they have from the curriculum from young children up through secondary, and it was really wonderful to see a school based on Buddhist principles where the children learn mindfulness, they learn respectful manners. It was pretty nice, so I had a very, very good time. I gave a talk to the kids in primary. I told them all about the animals we have in the Abbey. But you know, because of kids of that old, they're much more interested in animals than human beings. So they thought, you know, all the talk about deer and hare and cougars, and you know, they really like that. And then I spoke to the secondary school kids, and I was very impressed because there was no translation. They all spoke very good English, and they asked me questions. And then I went out in the garden. They wanted me to plant a tree, so I lifted a tree from the pot and put it in the hole, and then all the kids filled in the dirt. But it was really nice making the contact with the children and the teens. And so I really, you know, encourage those of you who have children, you know, to think about the Seco School. Because your kids will learn the Dharma when they're young. They'll learn mindfulness and how to treat human beings properly. They'll learn about compassion. And I think that that's very, very important for kids. You know, it's one thing to get your education in reading, writing, math, science, and so on. But I think the real purpose of an education is to make people into good citizens and people who can live a happy life and treat other people fairly and honestly. And so I was very pleased to see a Buddhist school that was based on those kind of values. Okay. So I strongly encourage that. Okay, so last night we talked about anger. Anger. Did any of you get angry today? No? Maybe a little bit? Some uncooperative person in your workplace, or maybe in your family, somebody did something you didn't like. Yeah, so learning the tools of how to deal with anger are really practical and very important because it's so easy for us to get upset about different things. So today, I'm going to follow up. We're not going to talk about anger so much today, but I thought to talk about another affliction that torments us, and that one is jealousy. Anybody here get jealous?
Oh, no.
Everyone wants to make a strong determination to overcome this self-centered attitude. And to cultivate the mind that cherishes other living beings as much as we cherish ourselves, and even more than we cherish ourselves. And then cherishing others in that way, may we develop great love, great compassion, and the altruistic intention of bodhicitta that wants to become a fully awakened Buddha. So we can really benefit all those living beings in the best way. Liking some, disliking others. behaviors, all of this actually prevents us from connecting at our heart level with all these beings. Because we look at one person and we go, ew, I don't want to sit next to that person. Or we look over there, oh, I want to sit next to that person. And yet, both of them are strangers. We don't know either of them. They both have a whole life story. They both want to be happy and not suffer. But we discriminate against them based on very superficial reasons. Yeah? And this is the source of a lot of our problems in society. This kind of discrimination and prejudice. Putting people in categories. And many wars are fought over this. People of different religions. Oh, look at all of them. People of different races. Oh.
Over there, I like these people more.
do you think? Something would be really wrong, wouldn't it? Would be really wrong. If I just said, oh, I'm going to teach the women. I don't want to have anything to do with them. Yeah, they can sit here, but I'm teaching the women the Dharma. Because you are more valuable. Because you're like me. Those guys, something would be really wrong if I had that attitude, wouldn't it? Yeah. And how would that affect you? To know that you were being devalued. Wouldn't be very pleasant from your side either, would it? So this is what happens if we, you know, make judgments like that about people and favor some people over others or form opinions about some people and opinions about other people. So the women, they're like me. You guys are much more intelligent. You know, you're much more intelligent, much fairer, much more trustworthy. You know, these guys, they're violent. Yeah, all they do, they want to play football and all these violent games all the time. The women are calm, peaceful. I like teaching you better. Much more qualified than these guys. Now maybe you know what women feel like when men disregard them and think women are inferior and women don't deserve the same rights as men. Do you see how it creates problems? How it creates suffering? By being partial towards one group and ignoring another group. So this is what we want to overcome in our Dharma practice, this kind of partiality. And instead, develop an open-hearted concern with everybody, for everybody, and a mind that respects everybody. Often, people in our society who are ill or who are disabled, we ignore, we don't respect, oh, something's wrong with them. But that's not very fair on our part, is it? They're human beings, just like us, wanting happiness and not suffering. And you know what? If we live long enough, each and every one of us is going to become disabled in one way or another. Because that's what happens when the body ages. So if we have prejudice against disabled people, we're actually, you know, having prejudice against who we're going to be in the future. Do you think that when you're 70, 80, 90 years old, you're going to be bouncy and capable of doing everything that you're doing now? You know, with a clear memory and just as much energy? We may realize intellectually, no, I'm, you know, I'm going to age. But in our heart, we think, I'm going to beat the system. I'm going to age, but not really age. Yeah. Other people are going to be disabled. Other people will have dementia. But me? So I often think that respect is often more important to people than even food and clothing, shelter and medicine. Because when people respect us, we feel valued for who we are. When people don't respect us, we feel invisible and devalued. I told you yesterday that I do a lot of work with people who are incarcerated in prison. And when I go in to teach the Buddhist groups and so on, I just look at the guys just like I look at everybody else and talk to them just how I talk to everybody else. And I realize that for them, sometimes it's very startling and surprising for somebody to treat them like they treat everybody else. Because very often, when you're in prison, people think that you're just the scum of the earth, have no value at all, and the guards are not very nice to you. The rest of the prison staff is not very nice. Society wants to lock you up and throw away the key. And yet, you're a human being just like everybody else. And some of the guys that I work with in prison are very sharp, mentally very intelligent. Some of them are fantastic artists. Sometimes they'll send me things that they've drawn or painted. Really good artists. They have all sorts of abilities and talents, but they aren't given the opportunity to express those because they're in the controlled environment of prison. One of my friends, talking about respect, told me the story of he was one day in Berkeley, California. Berkeley is a university city, but it's also a place where there's many homeless people who sit on the street. And he told me that he was walking down the street and there was one woman who was homeless, sitting on the sidewalk, panhandling, begging. And he gave her a dollar, and he gave it to her with both hands, leaning over in a very respectful gesture to put it in her hands, and looked her in the eye and said, "I wish I had more, but I don't give you now, but I wish you well." And after he said that to her, her eyes filled with tears. Because what touched her more than anything was the fact that he respected her as a human being, looked her in the eyes, gave the dollar with his hands. He didn't just walk past her like this without looking at her. He made contact. And that was, I think, more important to her than the money. And that's why her eyes filled with tears. So being able to show respect towards each and every other living being is something quite important. not only for our Dharma practice, but also for the well-being of others, so that other people feel valued, so that they feel like their existence in the world is something important. So when we talk about benefiting others in Buddhism, there's so many different ways to benefit them. And we don't need to be Mother Teresa or the Dalai Lama. We just need to pay attention to whoever is in front of our nose at a particular moment and treat that person respectfully. That's all we need to do. And that can make a very big difference in people's lives. So, to talk about jealousy. Jealousy and respecting others don't go very well together, do they? If we're jealous of someone, I don't think we respect them. We don't treat them very well. We don't think that they want happiness and not suffering. When we're jealous, we're basically only thinking about ourselves. I want this, and somebody else has it. And that is unbearable that somebody else has what I want, because I should have what I want, not them. And then jealousy leads us to become quite nasty. When we're jealous of somebody, we don't treat them very well. We want to destroy their happiness and take their happiness for ourselves. So we get jealous of other people over all sorts of things. We're jealous because they have more money than us. We're jealous because they have a better marriage. We're jealous because the Dharma teacher pays more attention to them. We're jealous because their children got into, certain schools and our kids didn't. We're jealous because physically they're more attractive than us. We're jealous because they're more intelligent than us. We're jealous. We can be jealous about anything. What do you think? Can you be jealous about just about anything? I'm jealous because I like that person's hair color more than mine. I'm jealous because their car is bigger than mine. I'm jealous because their home has a hot tub. We can get jealous over so many things. I'm jealous because they get to sit in the front of the Dharma Hall. Or maybe I'm jealous because they get to sit in the back of the Dharma Hall. Whatever it is that we think is nice, we'll get jealous. Are we happy when we're jealous? We are miserable. Totally miserable. Someone that you like, pays attention to someone else, they can't do that. do this and that, and this and that, because other people will look at you and I can't stand them. So then you treat another person like they're your personal property. Is another person your personal property? No. There's no slavery here. You don't own anybody. Nobody is our property. But we want to control them. And in the practice of trying to control somebody, we push them away because the other person doesn't want to be controlled. Now, do you want to be controlled? Anybody here like to be controlled? Somebody tries to control me and bye-bye. And yet, that's what jealousy does to a relationship. When we're jealous of somebody that we care about, we actually are pushing them away with our jealousy. Okay? So, we have to be quite careful of jealousy. It really is painful and it makes a mess in our lives. I used to not think I had a problem with jealousy. And then, one summer, I was living in Dharamsala, India. And my teacher was there, and he has many disciples. And other people got to make tea for him and make breakfast for him and offer the food to him. And I didn't. I was assigned to lead courses and to teach people meditation and teach them the Dharma. But these other people got to cook food and offer tea and be with my teacher more than me. Oh, I was so jealous. And then my teacher, he doesn't sleep very much, so he would start his morning prayers at and practices at 4 o'clock in the morning, and he would ask some of his students to come in. He had a very small room, he didn't know very many people. And he would ask them to come, and then they would do deep pujas and practices together in the morning. And I wasn't asked to go because I had to lead the meditation for the lay people. All these other people got to meditate with my teacher. Oh, and it's so nice when you can meditate with your teacher. So your teacher has this wonderful, calm energy, and you sit there, and you feel so good, and you feel a little bit important, because your teacher asked you to come in and do the morning meditation, and not many people and I looked at some of my friends who got to do that. Oh, I was so jealous. I was so jealous. I had to teach other people how to meditate. Oh, if I wanted to be with my teacher, close to the important holy person, so that maybe some of his holiness would rub off on me. So I was miserable with my jealousy, totally miserable. And lunch. I didn't understand things at all. Yeah? I was jealous of people who cooked oatmeal and made tea, as if they were better than me. I didn't realize that my teacher asking me to go and teach the lay people was actually a compliment, and it actually showed his trust in me. I didn't see that at all. All I saw was oatmeal and tea, and I didn't get to make it. If my teacher had asked me to make oatmeal and tea for the lay people, I would have been miserable. I would have been angry. But if he asked me to make tea and oatmeal for him, I would have been in seventh heaven. The action of making oatmeal and tea is the same. It's exactly the same how you do the oatmeal and how you make the tea and how you wash the dishes afterwards. But I only wanted to do that for my teacher who was older. And I didn't want to do it for all the Dharma students who were actually the people that my teacher cherished more than himself. But I couldn't see any of it. I look back on it and I think, what in the world was I thinking that I got so jealous? That was so dumb. Yeah. I got jealous because they got to go and do meditation with our teacher. Actually, I should have rejoiced because they're creating merit. Yeah, here are people creating merit, creating the cause of happiness. Why am I begrudging them that? And wanting them to not be able to go in the room and meditate with my teacher, but I should be able to. Because somehow I was superior. So stupid. Really, so stupid. And I suffered so much over nothing. Yeah, over nothing. We had a woman once come when I visited a monastery in France. A woman came. She was interested in the Dharma, and she was so upset and so jealous because her husband had left her to be with a younger woman. And she was just burning with jealousy. Oh, you know, I've been married to him for so long, and then he left. We had made so much of a life together. We had so much going. And then he left to be with a younger woman. She was miserable and jealous. And I said to her, relax. Now she's the one who gets to pick up his dirty socks. You don't have to pick up his dirty socks anymore. You don't have to put up with his nonsense. The other woman is going to do that. You should rejoice. Yeah. If your husband was so lacking in integrity that he would run off with a younger woman, and that's really not somebody you want to be married to anyway. Yeah, let her have that jerk. So eventually she became a nun. And she was very happy as a nun. No husband. So happy. So I wanted to share with you some things that Shantideva said about jealousy. He's an 8th century Indian sage who wrote this book called, the title is often translated as Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life, or Engaging in the Bodhisattva's Deeds. Okay? And so this was the book I talked about last night, you know, that I would go and read every night to calm down after I dealt with Sam every day. So Shantideva also had some things about jealousy. I thought I would share them with you. Okay, so one of them is, yeah, that we always wish other sentient beings to have happiness, don't we? We recite the four immeasurables. May all sentient beings have happiness in those causes. May all sentient beings be free of suffering in those causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from sorrowless bliss. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free of bias, attachment, and anger. We're always saying that. We always dedicate our merit for the well-being of sentient beings. So when some sentient being has some happiness, why do we begrudge them that happiness and want to have it for ourselves when we're always praying that they have happiness? And now I didn't even have to do anything, and they have happiness. So why am I jealous? We always pray, you know, may everybody have enough to eat. May nobody be poor. Yeah. May people feel secure in their homes. So then, when somebody has a nice home and good food, why are we jealous? They have what we've been praying for them to have. So getting jealous is really rather foolish, isn't it? Okay. And another thing he says is, you know, we're people who are training in the Bodhisattva path. So we want all sentient beings to become fully awakened Buddhists and have the bliss of Buddhahood. Okay. So if that's the case, we want them to have the ultimate bliss that comes from having spiritual realizations. Why are we jealous if they find some small worldly happiness by themselves? Yeah? We pray, may they be Buddha, may they experience the bliss of Buddhahood. But then, yeah, they have a car that is nicer than our car. Oh, unbearable. I can't stand it. But the happiness that comes from having a car is this big compared to the happiness of becoming a Buddha, which is like fills the sky. And yet, we're jealous when somebody has this much little happiness, even though we're praying for them to have a slight sky. If I don't want sentient beings to have even some small, small worldly happiness, if I don't want even that for them, how can I want them to have the happiness of awakening? How can I be a Bodhi, become a Bodhisattva? How can I become a Buddha if I don't want other living beings to have the supreme happiness that exists? And instead, I begrudge them when they have an ice cream cone that I didn't get to have. I want them to have the happiness of Buddhahood, but I don't want my colleague to get the promotion. I want the promotion. And if my colleague gets the promotion, I am jealous. Actually, I think being jealous of people who get promotions is really dumb. Because you know when you get a promotion, you know the kind of benefit you get from a promotion? Instead of working 8-hour days, you now have the privilege of working 10 hours every day for no extra pay. Yeah. When you get the promotion, then you have the great happiness of everybody complaining to you because you're their boss. So all the complaints go to the boss. You have the great happiness of working overtime and spending less time with your family and less time doing other activities that you enjoy. So why in the world are you jealous of somebody who got the promotion when all they're getting is basically a whole bunch more suffering? My mother. My mother used to say, when I misbehaved as a child, yeah. Well, she said a lot of things when I misbehaved. I won't repeat all of them here. But one thing she said is, just wait until you have children, and then you'll know what it's like. How much I go through having you. Now, did your parents say that to you? Yeah. Just you wait until you have kids, and then you'll know what I went through. So I didn't have any kids.
We're such addicts chasing after it.
Because jealousy is related to anger. You know, we're angry because somebody has something that we don't have. We want to destroy what they have and take it for ourselves. Okay? So, when I'm jealous, it doesn't, you know, the happiness they have is something so small and so insignificant that why do I waste my own energy getting jealous? And why do I destroy my own merit by getting jealous? Especially since my merit is the cause of my happiness. Because if I get angry and jealous, I'm the one creating the cause for my own suffering. Is that person having some little bit of happiness worth my creating, my destroying my merit, and my destroying my own causes for happiness? Doesn't make any sense, does it? And then he also says, this one really gets me. Even if I'm so jealous that I wish my enemy or anybody else for that matter harm because they got what I wanted. Yeah. And even if they got it and then they lost it. They got the promotion and then they got fired. Yeah. They got, you know, my boyfriend ran away with somebody else. But then he ran away from her too. And she suffered, you know? So even if I wish somebody else harm, and they, because I'm jealous of them, and then they get harmed, and I feel so good. Ooh, my enemy got it. Yeah. I'm so happy. That person was so jealous of them. They lost it. Let them suffer. If I rejoice like that at somebody else's suffering, what does that say about me as a human being? If I take pleasure in somebody else suffering because I'm jealous of them and I succeeded in separating them from getting what they wanted, what kind of person does that make me that I rejoice when somebody else is miserable? Yeah. Am I going to have any basis for self-respect if I rejoice in other people's misery? What do you think? If I rejoice at other people's misery, you know, I'm in bad shape then, aren't I? Yeah. Okay. So that one always makes me stop and think. Do I want to be the kind of person that rejoices when somebody else is unhappy? I don't want to be that kind of person. Yeah. I do not want to be that kind of person. So to avoid doing that, then I need to stop being jealous. Because jealousy is what motivates me. And then the last thing that Shantideva says is, let alone not regretting my own negative actions, why do I want to compete with other people? purify my own non-virtuous actions. That also doesn't make much sense. And yet, sometimes we get jealous of other people's virtue. Oh, that person made a bigger offering than I did. I'm so jealous. Why are we jealous? Why don't we just rejoice? Sometimes, really, in Dharma situations, we get jealous of other practitioners. Oh, the teacher wrote in work in my heart. Or the teacher wrote in your car.
To meditate when we have a negative emotion. feelings, such as anger, jealousy, hatred, or anything else. But my question is, when we feel those negative feelings or negative feelings, in my personal opinion and of my personal practice, it's really hard to understand that how to overcome this when we experience those feelings. Can you share with us the way?
Yeah. Okay. So it is when a negative emotion, a disturbing emotion arises in full force, it's very difficult to pacify it. The trick is to learn the antidotes and to practice them repeatedly, even when you're not under the sway of that emotion. Okay? So, for example, with jealousy, the antidote is rejoicing, to feel happy about somebody else's good fortune or good qualities or virtue or whatever it is. So I can't wait until, you know, somebody's doing something and has some happiness that I want to start thinking about rejoicing. I have to, on a daily basis, practice rejoicing, even when I'm not jealous, so that I can get in the habit of looking at situations in that different way. Same thing with anger. Yeah, I need to practice the various ways of looking at the situation that I taught last night. I need to practice those very often when I'm not angry. Thinking about situations in which I might get angry, and then envisioning myself thinking and acting in a different way, so that I create some familiarity with new thoughts and new behavior in my imagination, in my meditation, repeatedly. If I do that, then when a situation actually happens, it's much easier to remain calm or to overcome whatever destructive emotion is manifesting. But if I don't practice the antidotes at other times, then I'm going to be bereft when the situation happens. It's kind of like, okay, when your children have to take exams, is it important for them to study before the exam? Do you tell them to study? Yeah. The exam hasn't happened yet, but you tell your kids to study, and you tell your kids to memorize, and you tell your kids to think about what they learned. Even if there's no exam, by then preparing like that, then when they go to take the exam, they know the answers and they know how to write the essay. If they don't do any preparation by thinking about the material beforehand and, you know, going over it and studying it beforehand, if they go into the exam cold, you know, they're not going to know anything and they'll get a very poor grade. It's the same thing with our Dharma practice. We need to study and habituate our mind beforehand so when the situation happens, we know how to respond. And we remember that because we're familiar with practicing it beforehand. Okay? That's it. without even trying. Yeah? What food are you going to say? It's like the famous joke where somebody, what is it? Somebody's praying, you know, Buddha, please, I want to win the lottery, I want to win the lottery, I want to win the lottery. Buddha, please, can I win the lottery? And then you hear what the Buddha says to you, buy a ticket. Doing when you're meditating. Yeah, you've understood one of the and you're really integrating it into your mind. Yeah. Okay. Somebody over here had a question. The impermanence, So we're trying in the stage of meditation to really get some personal, strong personal experience. Okay. So there's still some analysis, but it's much more subtle. And then finally, we overcome the analysis. And then we, we unite what we call, we unite serenity and insight. And then just meditate single-pointedly on the conclusion of the analysis.
Thank you, Venerable. My question is that we often pray to the Buddha and the Sangha, and then we do supplicate and ask help from the Buddha whenever we have a problem or we are in troubles. And in the sense of thinking that the Buddha will come in a form, like an entity in a spiritual form, come and help us. And I found in one of your writings, you said that whenever we pray to Allah, we are not expecting a goddess in great color come down from the heaven and then come and help you. But rather, we are recalling our inner wisdom, we are recalling our understanding on the path that it can protect us. Could you please provide a more explanation on it? Thank you.
Okay. Well, I think I'm just going to basically repeat. Yeah. Because the thing is, often we deal with spiritual language in a very literal way. You know, we pray to the Buddha, you know, Buddha, please may I recover from this illness. As if Buddha is all of a sudden going to appear before us with the medicine and a cup of water to take it, you know? No, that's not. If we pray to the Buddha, please may I be more patient? May I be more tolerant? Yeah. It's not that Buddha is gonna, you know, somehow crawl inside of our head and throw some switches and, you know, we're gonna come out more patient and tolerant. What's really happening is we're vocalizing our aspiration, and then we need to practice the teachings that the Buddha taught in order to cultivate that quality. And then the Buddha, you know, can send out what we call his enlightening or awakening influence. Yeah. And that can affect us. But if we don't do our share, by trying to practice the teachings and thinking and meditating about them, even the Buddha appears before us, nothing's going to change. Yeah? If we don't do our part, yeah, the Buddha cannot lead us to awakening. We have a saying in the U.S., you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. Okay? So it's similar. You can lead a disciple along the path, but you can't make the disciple practice the teachings in such a way so that they gain the realizations. The disciple has to do that themselves. The teacher can't do it for us. So let's do our 1 or 2 minute meditation now to remember the important points of what we heard so that we can take them home and reflect on them more and habituate our mind with them. Let's read to it. You do this.